Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, I want to let you know right out of the gate that by no wild stretch of the imagination am I a consultant, a counselor, or an authority on a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an example, good, bad, or indifferent, that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous works. It hasn't been necessary for me to drink anything or swallow anything or stick anything in my arm since sometime before the fourth day of November, 1959. And from that day to this day, the only therapy that's been introduced in my life is a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as I understand it, is outlined within the first 164 pages of our book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I've come to learn in the last 36 years plus of my life by attending meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and having a kind and generous and firm sponsor who leads me through life is that what Alcoholics Anonymous is not. And there seems to be some confusion about that today with all the influx of all the intellectuals who are floating through here with their 30-day wonder programs and their validation of their insurance policies. What Alcoholics Anonymous is not, it's not group therapy. What Alcoholics Anonymous is not a self-help program. What Alcoholics Anonymous is not a place to entertain people between dances. And what Alcoholics Anonymous is not a panacea for every bent fender who walks down the road. Alcoholics Anonymous has one purpose and one purpose only, and that is to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, because there seems to be something going on when one alcoholic talks and another alcoholic listens that nobody seems to know. Many, many, many years ago, before Alcoholics Anonymous was even dreamed about or there was no thought about Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a program where five people got together and called themselves the Washingtonians, and they found out, these five people who were bad drunkards, that if they talked to one another, they could stay sober. And they got such a great idea that they started doing this, and the first thing you knew, up and down the East Coast from Baltimore up and down, a movement of sober people emerged. And they got so carried away with themselves that they said, like you hear in a lot of places today, God, this is a wonderful thing. Maybe we should just let everybody in on this secret. And so they opened up the doors of their little program and allowed everybody to come in, and the first thing you know, they got involved in politics and they got involved in all these other kind of things. And in 3 short years, this thing who was greater and bigger and faster than Alcoholics Anonymous ever thought about grew and was completely and totally disappeared from the face of this earth. And for the next 100 years, there was no answer for the alcoholic and his recovery from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Until a series of events started to happen in the early 30s, there was a guy from a very wealthy family in the eastern part of the United States who was a bad, bad, bad drinker. And they had sent him over to Switzerland to be counseled time and time and time again by this leading psychiatrist in the field at that time, a guy by the name of Carl Jung. And so his family sent him over there, and he'd go over there and get sober, and next thing you knew, he got drunk again. They sent him back. And he made a statement to this guy. His guy's name was Roland. He said, "I have misdiagnosed your case." He said, "I thought maybe you had just a drinking problem, but I have come to understand that you're an alcoholic of a very serious nature. And in my experience," this was the leading man in this field of his day, "in my experience, there's no hope for you, that you will either die or go insane or drink yourself or have to be confined in an institution for the rest of your life. And this is not very good news for if you're, you know, in your early 30s. I mean, that's kind of bleak, you know, when you got all this money and all this other kind of stuff. And he said, well, there's no hope for me. It's nothing. And he said, well, he said, every once in a while, down through history, there had been cases of people of your ilk who have had some type of a profound spiritual experience, which seems to be the only type of a deal that can help people like you. And so this guy took off and went back, and I guess he found some type of a spiritual experience, because he was carrying the message of whatever he had found one day in a courtroom to a guy by the name of Evie Thatcher. And Ebby is the guy that carried the message to Bill Wilson. And Bill Wilson, as most of you know, finally got sober and had some type of a profound spiritual experience in a hospital. But what a lot of people don't seem to understand is that before Bill Wilson had this profound spiritual experience, there were some various actions that Bill Wilson took. And they're outlined in his story, the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had one, and I was going to read it, but it seemed like somebody stole my book. Oh, take yours. I autographed yours. That would be really good. But I would like to show you what I'm talking about by reading you out of Bill's story. Said, at the hospital, I was separated from alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise, for I showed signs of delirium tremens. That means whiskey fits. There I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood him to do with me as he would. I placed myself unreservedly on his care and direction. I admitted for the first time of myself I was nothing, that without him I was lost. I was ruthlessly faced by sins and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away root and branch. I have not had a drink since. It's amazing to me the number of people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous today who think by some strange hook or crook that they have discovered the cure for alcoholism by not drinking. Nothing could be more profoundly insane than to think that I have some type of an alcohol problem because I don't drink. Alcohol has never, ever been my problem. It's not my problem today. It was my problem before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it never will be my problem. Sobriety seems to be my problem. If I could stay sober on my own, I sure as hell wouldn't be in wherever I'm at today. I would. I'd be in Long Beach. It's 80 degrees in Long Beach, for Christ's sake. And I'd probably be in my shirt sleeves playing golf. But you see, what I've come to understand is of myself, I can't keep from drinking. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in November 1959, I had just I left a cell in solitary confinement where I had been confined for a period of time because of my insanity. I had gone completely and totally insane. I have been diagnosed as clinically insane. I have been diagnosed that I can never live outside of an institution without some type of medication in my system. And yet from my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to this one, I haven't had anything in my system stronger than an aspirin. So something basically has happened to me. Something profoundly has happened to me, because from the time I was 9 years old until that day in November 1959, I couldn't keep from drinking. I didn't have a slightest idea what was wrong with me, and I didn't know what was wrong with me, and I stumbled into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get no credit for coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, because if I'd have known where I was coming today, I wouldn't have come. I was not alcoholic. If you'd have put me at a doorway that day and put a lie detector test on my arm and said, are you alcoholic? I'd have said, no, I'm not. And the needle wouldn't have moved, which seems to be a great dilemma in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have always had some, like a little sick idea what I would like to do. I would like to sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous somewhere at the doorway with a lie detector and ask everybody who comes in the door, are you alcoholic? You would get some of the most profound answers on that lie detector test that you were, because I'm going to tell you, and this is my own personal belief, I believe that most of the people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous haven't got a clue what's wrong with them. They don't have a clue. Somebody told them that they have a drinking problem, or somebody told them that they were alcoholic, but they don't have a clue. And they'll say, oh yeah, I'm alcoholic. But this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, tells me, I had a guy said one night, he says, I don't know where the first step is in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I do. It's in the third chapter of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It said, we had to learn to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. That's the first step in recovery. Now, that's the first step in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I admitted that I'm powerless over alcohol. Dash means there's another thought coming there, and my life has become unmanageable. I can't manage my own life. I can't run it. I couldn't run it before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't run it right now. But to admit that there's a twofold nature to my disease, and that's a double admission of defeat, is a big chunk of things for an alcoholic of my type to swallow. What do you mean I'm powerless over alcohol? I can't handle it? What do you mean I'm powerless over alcohol? A little simple drink like that? Something seems to happen to me when I drink alcohol that doesn't happen to everybody else who drinks. I can't control and enjoy my drinking. And I heard a guy talk about it the other night. He says in chapter three more about alcohol, is to try all these various things. We try to control and enjoy our drinking. Now, the sad part about it with alcoholics like me, if I'm controlling my drinking, I'm not enjoying it. But by the same token, if I'm enjoying it, I can't control it. And that's the type of a two-headed dilemma that I'm in. And it also says in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is the thing that I'm really amazed by, that so many people seem to think that Alcoholics Anonymous is something other than what's in this book. This is a program of recovery, not about drinking. And I know that almost sounds like heresy, but it's a program of recovery about how to live without drinking. And that's what it says here. It says in this book, rarely have we seen a person failed who has thoroughly followed our path. Now, that's a pretty deep statement. Rarely have we seen a person failed who has thoroughly followed this path. It says, those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. This simple program, period. And in that one word, this simple program, is a dilemma that kills a lot of alcoholics today. It's just too damn simple. I mean, that's what it said. It says here, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And it's my opinion that the majority of people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous today don't want a damn thing we got. Not a thing. They don't want anything we got. I mean, they got all these other therapeutic crap that they take and all this other stuff that they do. But it says here, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And you hear all kinds of stuff like, well, when do you think I ought to get into the steps? When do you want to start getting well, for Christ's sake? I mean, that's very simple. That's all it is. If you admit that you're powerless over something and that your life is unmanageable, that says to me very simply that I have to find another manager, that I'm not doing a very good job. If my life is unmanageable, what makes them think that just because I quit drinking, I can manage things again? That's an amazing egotistical thought process that seems to run through the mind of alcoholics of my type. Oh, everything's just fine now. I don't drink anymore. It's just wonderful here. I have to find some type of a way to live with the unresolved nightmares of my past if I want to have any type of an opportunity not to drink. See, I did not drink after I was sober because I was affected with the phenomenon of craving all the time and I ran around craving a drink. There's no craving of alcohol in my system today because I don't have any alcohol in my system, so there is no craving there. Once I ingest alcohol into my system, I am phenomenal with a craving that's beyond all human help and human understanding. Once I ingest alcohol into my system, if there's no alcohol in my system, there is no craving. None whatsoever. My body is physically as normal as anybody else's if there's no alcohol in my system. Nobody knows why that is, and nobody's ever been able to figure it out, and I hope they never do get so smart that they figure all this stuff out. Once I take that drink, I'm powerless not to take the next one. And so what I've come to understand, that the whole program of Alcoholics Anonymous is designed to do one very simple thing, is to keep me from taking a drink of alcohol. Because once I take the drink of alcohol, I am doomed not to take the next one, a drink of alcohol. Now, how do I do that? I can't manage my own life, and I'm powerless over this thing, so I have to get a new power. It says, I came to believe that a power greater than myself, which ain't me, could restore me to sanity. Isn't it amazing? You don't have to restore sane people to sanity. I know that's a little bit deep, but that's a left-handed saying that we're nuttier than fruitcakes. I mean, really, I mean, you don't think insanity. I'll tell you the best definition of insanity I ever heard in my life. It's repeating the same actions over and over and over again and expecting different results. And there ain't an alcoholic walking around on the face of the earth who can't buy that 100%. I don't know how you define sanity or insane or all this other kind of nonsense. I really don't know. I don't know when you do this. Somewhere along the line, the desperation and the pain has to become so great in people like me that I have to surrender to something. And I don't know what it is half the time I was surrendering. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not have the ability to believe anything at all. So I put my faith in a power greater than myself, which I saw was the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. And not in all of them, because I never have been one of those people who could believe everybody and everything that came about. But I came to believe there's a power greater than ourselves. Most of this stuff that happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous when I first came here, I couldn't buy it at all. When I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was no way in the world I could admit that I was an alcoholic because I didn't know what an alcoholic was. When I came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore me to sanity, I could not, for a simple belief in my life, believe that I was insane. Now, I have a piece of paper in my pocket at that time that says I was clinically insane, but I couldn't buy that. Now, that's how far gone I was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I just could not buy this thing. I couldn't buy the idea that I was insane. I didn't know what sanity talked to. I didn't have the slightest idea what sane and sanity and normality was, what people did. I didn't know anything about any of that type of operation or living when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. The third thing in Alcoholics Anonymous that I was asked to do in this book, it says something that's very hard for alcoholics of my type to do. It said I have to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. I think that is probably one of the most misunderstood things that go on here. Because you hear all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and kind of a, I don't pay much attention to it, I just let it go in one ear and out the other. I just talk to God all the time. God is my sponsor. Good, good, good. God, that's just wonderful. This step does not say I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to God as I understand Him. It says I place my will and my care into the care of God as I understand Him. That means I put my life into the care of God. Now, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have a God. I didn't believe in a God. If there was a God, I didn't even know where I was at. I'll tell you that. It does not say in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, or anywhere that I've read in this thing, that I made a decision to turn my, to place my will and my life in over to God. If we could do that, if I could turn my life over to God, then you'd have to explain to me what these other nine steps are all about. You would have to explain to me very simply why is it necessary for any of these nine steps, why is it necessary for me to have a sponsor, why is it necessary for me to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, why is it necessary for me to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffered, if I could turn my will and my life over to God. There'd be no necessity for nothing. I mean, God, you'd have to, you know, you'd have to go to meetings anymore. I mean, you wouldn't have anything. It doesn't say that. It says, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. That's all. If I could turn my life over to God and leave it there, I would never have anything else. I would just probably wander around and glow somewhere. It would be absolutely awe-inspiring to see somebody who actually could do that. It doesn't say that in this program, and I don't know any alcoholic who can do it. I know we have a lot of egotists who think they have, but it's really not possible. It says the care of God. That's like, I heard it described one time. A guy said he went somewhere, and he had a little dog. I know people have little dogs. They take them down and put them in the kennels. It doesn't say that they take that dog down there and turn him over to the kennel and just go away and leave him for the rest of time. They place him into the care of that kennel, and when they go back, they get the little dog. The little dog comes over there, and they got the little dog back again. It doesn't say anything like that. Over on page 63 of our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it's amazing to me that most of the people think that Alcoholics Anonymous ends when you say the ABCs in the fifth chapter. If we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, that God could and would if He were Son. On page 60 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, being convinced we were at step 3, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? Now, over here on page 30, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. Now, from page 30 to page 60, it must be obvious that we're working on that step that says we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. There's 30 pages in there that must be about step 2, because when you get over to page 60, it says being convinced we were at step 3. All the way over there, step 3. So we just got through 60 pages, and we just got to step 3. And step 3, to me, is very simple. I read it every day of my life. It's the first thing I do every morning. It says, God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and do with me as Thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. It said very simply, we thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. Now, I don't know what that prayer says to anybody else, but what it says to me is this. That it's not up to me to better myself through my own efforts. That it's not up to me to better myself through my own thought process, to learn anything, to be entitled to anything, to do anything. It says here that what I do is that I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. And I offer myself to Him to do with me whatever He will. Somewhere, someplace in this book, one of the things that Bill Wilson, one of our co-founders, loved very much was the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. And the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi says very simply the same thing that the third step prayer says to us. That what I become is a servant in my Father's house. I don't become the house. I'm just a servant. I am not the music that's played from the instrument. I am the instrument. That's the simple. I'm supposed to be used to portray the music of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's my only purpose and direction in life. I'm to be used in any way, shape, or form that this program or this God, as I've come to understanding, wants to use me to better benefit Him, which does the thing that relieves me from the bondage of self. It gets rid of me. That's what it's all about. That's what this step is all about. This step is to free me from me, to turn me over to something else, to use with me as I will. All you do is just wander around and try to be some type of an example that no matter what's going on in the world out there or in my life personally, it has no bearing on what my actions are. It has no bearing on what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous. That Alcoholics Anonymous and my participation in Alcoholics Anonymous is the cornerstone for everything that happens in my life. Everything flows from this. Everything flows from this magnificent power that I have discovered here by just sitting down and doing what I'm asked to do. Not complicating with a bunch of therapeutic nonsense that has nothing to do at all with what's wrong with me. That's all. Not to become so egotistical to believe that I am some type of a special chosen one that God has anointed to do His bidding here on earth. We just celebrated that cat's birthday last month. I'm not that. What has happened to me is something I do not understand. Something what has happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous and what put me into such a state that I would be willing to accept this large chunk of myself was nothing that I had done to personally to prepare myself for. I had driven me into an absolute state of nothingness. I had beat me and used me and tried every single thing in the world that I could possibly find to find this answer to what the problem was that was killing me that I didn't know that I had. Because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. And if you don't know what's wrong with you, you cannot find a solution or an answer to it. I didn't know. I didn't know that I was alcoholic. I didn't know that I suffered from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I had no way of knowing that. I had all the symptoms. I was restless, irritable, and discontent, and I had this craving once I took a drink, but I could not look back on that drink and say that's what got me. It was always the last thing. I always ended up in jail somewhere or strapped down, so I didn't know what was going on. And now I got to this point here. I had driven me literally into the gates of insanity and death and beyond through my own actions and through my own interpretations of what I thought. I had all the therapeutic and psychiatric help that the world has ever known. They threw him in a tub of ice, and then when he got nice and cool, they put him on a gurney and wheeled him down there and wired him for sound. It's called better living through electricity. Well, I had all that, too. Even today, sometimes when I hear that funeral music, I break out into a cold sweat. But I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. It comes something that you have to discover. But I'll tell you, once I discovered what had a hold of me, what type of a killer ailment I had, somewhere in the 12 and 12, I don't know where it's at, I can't point it out, I read it one time, sometime it says, to realize the very nature of my dilemma, to realize that I am caught in this grip of this terrible, debilitating, killer disease that I have that nobody understands, why we got it, where it come from, or how come it's limited to alcoholics of my type, why certain people have this ungodly reaction to this alcohol. Once I realize that I am in the grip of this deadly killer thing, I will do anything to keep this merciless off thing off of me. Now you ain't going to do anything if you don't know what you got. I mean, if you think all I got is a little alcohol problem, you ain't drinking, why the hell would you have to do anything else? That's like saying, I had a cold last week. I took some antibiotics and I don't have the cold anymore. So I'm healthy and I'm going to go on about your business. Alcoholism is not like that. The only thing that sobriety does for the alcoholic of my type is make life so damned unbearable that sooner or later I have to drink or go nuts. That's all. Unless I can find some way to live comfortably enough where I do not have to take a drink. And the only chance I have is what I just read you. I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as I wilt. That's a big chunk right there. That is preparing me for the things that are to come. To relieve me of the bondage of self. That says self, the bondage of self, which is the most profound statement in this book, I believe. I used to think that being locked up in a penitentiary or in a cell in solitary confinement or strapped down in restraints in one of them nut houses or in straitjackets was bondage. No. I'll guarantee you there's people sitting in this room who are in deeper bondage than I've ever been before in my life, because bondage is not a place. Bondage is a thing. The bondage of self is the most debilitating, destroying thing that we have. The book Alcoholics Anonymous says, selfishness and self-centeredness seem to be the root of my problem, and I must rid myself of it or it kills me. So how am I going to do that? How does a self-centered, self-seeking, egotistical idiot like me ever get rid of myself? I am full of myself. I am always, constantly, I'll guarantee you, that whenever I think about anything, I'm the first person in my thought. Really. I mean, we just passed the most selfish area of life. I mean, it's called Christmas. Once a year, people get together and try to celebrate what we're supposed to be doing every day. We were supposed to live every day. People think we're only supposed to do it one day of the year, Christmas. And what has happened over that period of time, we seem to forget what that's all about. Now it's about getting and giving. I want to get more than I give. That's Christmas. Wonder what I'm going to get. You ever sit around the Christmas tree and look at the Christmas tree in the house and see all the presents? I just had a very neat experience. Christmas with two little children, 1 6 and 1 9, two little girls. And I watched them. They're the most remarkable, self-centered things I've ever seen in my life. I mean, they ain't nothing but little eagles with arms and legs hanging on them. That's all they are. I'm sorry. Really. I mean, you know, and that's the way most of us are when we get here. Just little eagles, big eagles with arms and legs hanging on them. And they just, you know, they get down underneath the tree and find out, this is mine. This is mine. This is yours. No, no. You know, they haven't even started to tear the presents open yet. They're just, it's got them all separated in piles. So when Christmas comes, whoom, right to my pile. Yeah, look at this. Ha, ha. Look at this. Ha, ha, ha. Jesus, I sit there. Children are such a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous classroom for me to watch children at play. And to watch them, because all they do is what they feel. All they do is what they want. I mean, there's nothing in their world but them. You ever watch them? Their mind never focuses on anything more than 3 seconds. Then it's over here again. Then it's back here again. It's almost like a newcomer in AA. You know what I mean? That's really true. I mean, we come in here. Is this good? No, that's better. Just over here. I think, oh, yeah, it's over here. You know, just watch. Yeah, yeah, that's what I need. Just relationship, yes. Yeah. I mean, we haven't got a clue. So somehow or other, what this Dr. Jung told Roland in Switzerland in the early 30s, has to happen to people like me. I have to have some type of a spiritual upheaval within myself. Within myself. Not the world doesn't have to change. The world doesn't have to have some type of spiritual experience. I have to have some type of a spiritual upheaval within myself. Now, how am I going to get that? The chances of me having one of these profound spiritual experiences, or the chances of most of people like you, if you're here with me, is this. The chances of you having a profound spiritual experience with no action whatsoever is about as profound as the opportunity you have of hitting the lottery in all the 50 states at the same time, which is slim and none. Some of you may. I mean, I've heard people say, I had a spiritual experience. I said, it might be DTs, but you can call it anything you want. A spiritual upheaval to me, I believe that there's always a spirit within me. It was the thing that drove me crazy when I was sober for the actions that I did the last time. The people I'd harmed, the things I've done, the nightmares that are mine, the spirit of whatever that guilt and remorse that permeates itself into people like me, and I suppose people like you if you're here, is this nightmare that I lived with when I was sober that I had to get rid of, and a drink made it okay for a period of time. Little did I know that I was triggering something that would drive me into the gates of insanity and death, and the only way I was going to stop this thing was to get locked up somewhere, strapped away where I couldn't do it. I didn't know that. I had to discover that. But once a discovery was made, and realized I was in the grip of this killer, killer thing that was destroying me, and the only opportunity I had was to do these things. An old man that I love a great deal, we talked about him before, a guy by the name of Chuck Chamberlain, told me what I'm supposed to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm supposed to get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm supposed to the best of my ability try to clear up the wreckage of my past. And the way I do that is what he used to say is, I spend the rest of my life just wiping out my record. That's all. Just wiping out the record. That's what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to wipe out the record. And the record ain't wiped out just because I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous and found God, or her, whichever came first. It's just not that way. I mean, you know, basically what you see before you today is a very fallible, weak human being. That's all. Who has found a way to live in a world without having to take a drink to make the world better. That's all. I don't drink alcohol because I have found what I thought I found when I took my first drink, which is exactly what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about in the big picture. Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to do for alcoholics of my type, this book said, exactly what alcohol did for me. Only it does it very much slower and over a long period of time. How many times have you been sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? You've heard people talk, man, I spent all day long just having a ball, man, out there. Everything was fine, man. I was with my kids, or I was at the ball game, or I was with people from AA. I was out to dinner last night. We just had a ball out there. And there were people sitting around in the restaurant having drinks, trying to feel the way we were feeling. Just enjoying one another's cup, you know, talking about AA and stuff. You know what I mean? And sponsorship and all that other nonsense that AA people get together and talk about, you know, and making fun of the waiter. that's always a great deal. Yeah. Yeah. But it was an amazing thing. And as far as I can perceive, the first three steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are basically taken in the first, maybe first week or two that you're in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you really want to know the truth. Because you hear all people all the time, you see, these steps are not hard to take in your mind. I'm powerless over alcohol, and, you know, I don't drink, and, you know, I'm ready for God to restore me to sanity, man, and, yeah, turn my will and my life over to God. Yeah, man, that's it. That's great. But that's all we're going to talk about that when we come back. What am I supposed to do now, Al? I have to look at Al. He's my cue cards. You know. Oh. Well, that's all I got to say about the first three steps. Now I got to turn these over. Oh, God, you would ask this one. I got run out of San Jose for answering this question last week. Is there anybody got any questions about the first three steps before I go into this? Good. Rise and walk. Pick up your bed. Okay. How do you sponsor someone in therapy or on antidepressants? I don't. Nothing against therapy or nothing against antidepressants. I'm not in therapy, and I don't take pills. So what have I got to offer anybody? People who sponsor those people probably are people who are taking pills or in therapy. I personally don't believe in it, but that's my belief. But I dare not take somebody who's involved in all that crap and tell them, no, you can't do that, because they may die over it. So I probably tell them, they come to me and say, I have a rule, and this is my own little rule, and I do not compete Alcoholics Anonymous or bounce Alcoholics Anonymous off against anything. I do not have to defend Alcoholics Anonymous against any other type of therapeutic self-help nonsensical bullshit that you hear around here. Alcoholics Anonymous speaks for itself. I'm sober. Alcoholics Anonymous is the only thing that I've done the last 36 years, and I don't know anybody who lives any better than I do, and I do not have to defend that against somebody who don't know anything about anything. It's not my business. I'm not God. I can't tell you what to take and what not to take. You know what I mean? I just can't do that. I can't get you sober. I can't get you drunk. Nothing I can do about it. It's all I can do to stay sober myself one day at a time. It just sometimes it's all I do. Politically correct or not, I don't care. That's the way I feel. So I don't feel that it's necessary to take an antidepressant from self-centered depression. I believe if you get out of self, you don't need to take an antidepressant. You won't be depressed anymore. I'm not depressed. I've had 45 cups of coffee. Why should I be depressed? Yeah. But I was asked this question in Auckland, New Zealand, and I stated my opinion on it that I'm not in favor of it. I believe that all alcoholics, when they first get sober, are depressed. That's a natural state of an alcoholic when he quits drinking, is to be depressed. And I answer that question this way. I think I've been sober a long time. There's Earl sitting there, 41 years sober, he's been sober a long time. If you talk to anybody who's been sober a long time, you will find out that over a period of time, all kinds of what the world calls tragedies and upheavals in this area of life, you know, kids on drugs, you know, people dying, business going bad, money problems, fresh jobs, all these things happen to people when they get sober, believe it or not. I mean, really, God just doesn't throw the blanket over it and say, oh, you wonderful folks. You don't do that on me. All these things happen to you. All these things. I mean, it happened to me. I mean, I've been through divorce. I've been through business failures. I've been, my children are on drugs. My mother died drunk after 30 years of in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. All this stuff goes on. My oldest daughter won't talk to me because she thinks I like my youngest daughter better. Just all kinds of crap. You know what I mean? One of the real big things, relationships. Oh, Jesus. Now, this is just a hypothetical situation. Suppose this. Suppose that every time I got in a funk, I went. My higher power just came out of my pocket. This book says I have to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, not a pill. It doesn't say in this book I turn my will and my life over to the care of God and the pill and the therapist. None of that. And that's what I'm talking about. Now, I'm not talking about any of that other crap because I don't know anything about it. I'm not in the debating society about it. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear about it. It's a break. That's your business. You keep on doing it. I'm telling you about me. I'm alcoholic. I turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Now, when I get through one of these upheavals of life that I have seemingly ran into or run myself into, when I get on the other side of it and I'm out there skipping down the road again, I'm not going to look back and say, yep, my therapist and my Prozac got me through that, baby. I'm going to walk there and say, yep, there really is a power greater than myself. Because of myself and by myself, I could not pass through that turmoil on my own. So there has to be a power. So my faith in God has become stronger through my conflicts and my upheavals in life, not weaker. Because God hasn't picked on me to be some type of a scapegoat. I knew you was going to do this, Al, you devil. You're just going to get me run out of town on a rail, too. Is it not hinting or misleading for an alcoholic to introduce themselves as an alcoholic and something else? Well, it's a declaration of differences, probably. You don't really understand my case is different. If anybody that I know of says that, you know, I'm an alcoholic. If I was to squawk into me and say, I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict, I have automatically said to my own mind, maybe not to you, my case is a little bit different. I really don't have to do all that crap that you do. You know what I mean? I mean, because my case is different. And according to my sponsor, and I have no way of not believing what he says, because he's been sober longer than I have and worked with many more alcoholics than I have, the thing that's going to kill most of the people in this room who die drunk is that very little thing right there. My case is different. I read to you where it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. This is a program about Alcoholics Anonymous, about one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic. And for me to declare my differences to you was to say to you, I really don't have to do this. I have other things more important in my life, in my case, a little bit different. Bill wrote a pamphlet about problems other than alcohol. And then there was questions were asked to Bill. He said, can a drug addict become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? And Bill said no. But he also said, he asked him another question, is an alcoholic who takes other medication become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous? He says, yes, as long as they say they're an alcoholic. It's been my experience that these people who claim to be different, if they stay here long enough, they either have to get rid of the differences or they have to leave. Didn't really worry about them. Up until the third edition of the book Alcoholics Anonymous came out, you never heard that crap in Alcoholics Anonymous. Never heard it at all. All you were was alcoholics. See, you cannot go into Narcotic Anonymous and say, I'm an alcoholic. They won't let you say that in there. But we got all them others. Hey, babe, I'm an alcoholic and a dope fiend. I come over here to share. Why don't you go share in your own program, for Christ's sake? Oh, there ain't no sobriety over there. So that's been my experience on it. I think it's just a declaration of differences. How do you know if you've taken the first step? Does writing it down help? I don't know. I don't know where writing it down helps it or not. I really don't know. I just, I do know that it's a large chunk to swallow, and if you've taken the first step, it's entirety. If you swallowed that first step of yourself, I took my first step in my fifth step. That's how sick I was when I got here. I didn't take the first step until I took my fifth step, until I admitted to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. But once I discovered, and if you're alcoholic like I am, whether you write it down or whether you swallow it or whatever you do, the necessity of admitting to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic and you're caught in this trap that you can't spring by yourself is one of the first steps to freedom. You have to swallow a large chunk of yourself. I mean, it's more than just saying, oh yeah, I'm alcoholic. Why do you say that? Oh, they told me over there in treatment center, say that. And that's not what it says here. It said, in my innermost self, I'm alcoholic. And I don't think that walking into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and sitting down here, I hear people say it all the time, I knew I was alcoholic a long, long time before I ever got here. I think that's crap. How in the hell could you know you have a killer disease if you've never been here and found out what the disease is? All you really said is, I know I had an alcohol problem a long time before I got here. That's all you're saying. That I drank and got drunk and used to call me old Rusty Zipper down home. And all this other kind of stuff. No, that's not an alcoholic. That's a person who drinks. This book says that there's such a thing as a heavy drinker. A heavy drinker. I mean, people drink a lot of whiskey. But he said these people can quit drinking given any type of reasonable excuse. I'm not talking about those type of people. I'm talking about this book that was written for alcoholics of my type who need some type of a spiritual awakening, some type of a reversal in actions to give them this freedom from this deadly killer disease. That's what I'm talking about. That's what this day is all about. This day is not about people who have drinking problems, people who have alcohol problems, or people who are just looking in here to see where the dance starts. I'm talking about a killer disease that has killed more people in the history of mankind in the last 4,000 years than anything that's ever been known to man. And up until 1939, there was no written documentation, no program in print that would relieve me from this terrible burden by the actions followed within this book. That's what I'm talking about. That if I don't do it, I'm going to die drunk, no matter how many meetings I've been to, no matter how long it's been since I haven't taken a drink. If I don't continue to do this on a daily basis, I am going to die drunk. I am alcoholic. That's my lot in life. Or if I come to the point in my life where I can't drink and I can't stay sober, I'm going to blow my brains out. Alcoholics of my type commit suicide cold sober. Cold sober, because I can't stand sobriety and I can't stand drunkenness. And for all of you who have been having breaks all through the meeting, now the rest of us, we get a cup of coffee and go to the bathroom.